चन्न बहला गिरवर हरे गोपे चन्न बहला गिरवर हरे किशोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन किशोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुन क्षीर वन चरि यमुन क्षीर वन चरि जय राधा माधव सुंदरि हरे जय राधा माधव Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parvraj Gitar Sutair Sada Shri Shimana Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Disciple Devotion Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Kanamani Namaste Sarasvati Om Gaura Vana Vicharani Vishesha Shingavari Kastita Desi Charane Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10, Text 10, and we'll be continuing the second half of the purport. Okay, well, we did the essay, we'll go through it again. Purushondam vinirvidya Yadasausa vinirgata Atmano yanaman vichchan Purushondam vinirvidya Yadasausa vinirgata Atmano yanaman vichchan Others?
ladies, Vaishnavis. We did word for word yesterday. We'll just read the translation and then go into today's purport. After separating the different universes, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, Mahavishnu, which came out of the causal ocean, the place of appearance for the first Purusha avatar, entered into each of the separate universes, desiring to lie on the created transcendental water, Garbhadaka. Okay. So we begin with second page, men with a poor fund of knowledge. You find that part? Men with a poor, I'll go back and kind of recap the first half and read this. Men with a poor fund of knowledge, however, become astonished by studying the physical laws, both within the construction of the individual body and within the cosmic manifestation. And foolishly, they decry the existence of God, taking it for granted that the physical laws are independent, without any metaphysical control. The Bhagavad Gita replies to such foolishness in the following words: Avajananti ma mudha manushim tanmashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. The foolish men, mudhas, do not know the personality of Godhead in his eternal form of bliss and knowledge. The foolish man thinks of the transcendental body of the Lord as something like his own. Therefore, he cannot think of the unlimited controlling power of the Lord, who is not visible in the acting of the physical laws. The Lord is, however, visible to the naked eyes of people in general when he descends himself by his own personal potency. Lord Krishna incarnated himself as he is and played very wonderful parts as the Lord himself, and the Bhagavad Gita concerns such wonderful actions and knowledge. Generally, they consider the infinitesimal and infinite feature of the Lord. We're going back to the mudhas here. Generally, they consider the infinitesimal and infinite feature of the Lord because they themselves are unable to become either infinitesimal or the infinite. But one should know that the infinite and infinitesimal sizes of the Lord are not his highest glories. The most wonderful manifestation of the Lord's power, it is exhibited when the infinite Lord becomes visible to our eyes as one of us. I think that's such a nice statement there about Krishna's kindness to us. Yet his activities are different from those of finite beings. Lifting a mountain at the age of 7 years and marrying 16,000 wives in the prime of his youth are some of the examples of his infinite energy. But the mudhas, after seeing them or hearing about them, decry them as legendary and take the Lord as one of them. They cannot understand that Lord Sri Krishna, although in the form of a human being by his own potency, is still the Supreme Lord with full potency as the Supreme Controller. When, however, the mudhas give submissive and oral reception to the message of the Lord, as in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the channel of the cyclic succession, such mudhas also become devotees of the Lord by the grace of his pure devotees. And for this reason only, either the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastimes of the Lord in the material world are delineated for the benefit of those men with poor fund of knowledge. Om Gyana Tivanandasha Gananjana Sabakaya Chaksurun Mitanina Tasma Tri Gurbe Maha Vanchakalpa Tribhischa Kriva Sindhu Bebacha Patitano Pavanagyo Vaishabhavyo Namo Namaha Jai, Jai Prabhupada. A little quick background since we started in the middle of the purport here. Much of the yesterday, of course, was explained very nicely by Nagaraj. as far as some of the background about the Purusha avatars and why this particular line of purport is sort of inserted here in the middle of discussing the Bharata Rupa or the universal form. And I think Maharaj mentioned this, but just to repeat, it really goes back to the earlier questions of Maharaj Parikhit. So back two chapters in 2.8.11, Maharaj Parikhit says, O learned Brahman, it was formally explained that all the planets of the universe with their respective governors are situated in the different parts of the gigantic body of the Bharata Purusha. I've also heard that the different planetary systems are supposed to be in the gigantic body of the Bharata Purusha. But what is their actual position? Will you please explain that? I know the question came up a little bit about whether the Bharata Purusha is imaginary, whether it's metaphorical, what. I remember that very clearly Srila Prabhupada described in earlier chapters that is more or less imaginary, was his words. And that's also confirmed by other acharyas. So it's a way of imagining or thinking of, it's not that Krishna really has, it's certainly not an eternal form. Even what he showed, the universal form to Arjuna, it's not an eternal form of his. It's a temporary manifestation, you know, for a particular purpose, but it's not one of his, you know, like Leela avatars or something like that. Then later, 2946, just a little bit ago in the last chapter, Shukadeva says he's going to answer this. He says, King, or my dear King, your questions as to how the universe became manifested from the gigantic form of the person in the Godhead, as well as other questions, I shall answer in detail by explanation of four verses already mentioned. So, now he's referring, of course, to the Chatur Shloka, which we discussed very in-depth over many, many days recently in the last chapter. So, this is sort of an expansion or extension of the original statements or the original very key verses. Now they're being expanded in different ways. Now, the question raised by Srila Prabhupada, and this question was raised by Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary on this very same verse. And Prabhupada's purport follows along very similar to Vishnath's and to Jiva Goswami's purport. So Prabhupada always was very strictly in the specific succession. He always, you know, understood the acharyas. He read all the purports of the acharyas. Then he made his. Often they were very different, sometimes because of time and circumstance. And according to the circumstances of the time, he probably would go in very different directions, but sometimes he followed them very closely, which I think is one of the reasons why this purport goes a little bit differently than a lot of the verses and purports, which really stick with the Bharata Purusha in this particular chapter. Anyway, so the question Prabhupada raised was, there's much discussion of the activities of the universal form, the Purusha avatars, we have the three Vishnu expansions, and creation in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And these are all activities and lila that are relished by the devotees. You know, in other words, Krishna's lila of creation is also relished. Prabhupada said everything Krishna does is relishable because devotees see Krishna in everything. Nothing, a very advanced devotee, a pure devotee, sees everything, the material creation, everything that's here is also from Krishna. It's part of Krishna. It's not different from Krishna, which is what I believe the third Chatur Shloka is saying, you know, that not to see anything different, is that, or that's the fourth. Anyway, one of them. Anyway, remember that verse vaguely. Basically saying that, you know, you have to see everything in relationship to Krishna, otherwise it's illusion. You're an illusion. Okay, thank you. So, these are all Krishna's activities, but why not just hear Krishna's sweet Vrindavan pastimes? Prabhupada has said in the purport, and so did Vishwanath. The answer, Prabhupada says, the pastimes of Krishna are meant for more advanced devotees of the Lord, and these pastimes will be misunderstood by less advanced person, particularly by materialists. In other words, they will misinterpret Krishna's human-like pastimes as being like themselves. It's called anthropomorphism. We tend to put the qualities of ourselves as human beings on God. We think God is like us, you know, which is, of course, quite foolish. How would he be God if he had no more power than ordinary jivas, ordinary human beings, especially conditioned living entities? So, anyway, but these pastimes will not be so much understood by materialists. Therefore, the Bhagavatam attempts to bring along the materialists, the jnanis, neophytes, through the first nine cantos, to have a clear understanding of who Krishna is, what his position is, how he is actually the Supreme Lord, control or maintain or destroy of everything in the universe, and then prepare us for the 10th canto pastimes so we can really understand. Even though these are beautiful, sweet pastimes, we know who Krishna is. Ultimately, Krishna contains Brahman, Paramatma, Virata Rupa, all the avatars and everything. So the devotees see this as different from Krishna. We see this as part of Krishna. You know, so hearing of even the material energy in relation to Krishna will free one of illusion. This is described in the Bhagavatam 2.7.53. The verse is, the Lord's activities in association with his different energies should be described, appreciated, and heard accordance with the teaching of the Supreme Lord. If this is done regularly with devotion and respect, one is sure to get out of the illusory energy of the Lord. So the idea of this verse is that if we hear about the material energy in relationship to Krishna, not that we just praise the material energy and all the wonderful things that are going on, devoid of understanding of how it's connected with Krishna, if we understand that connection, we will become free of illusion and become advanced in Krishna consciousness. So, but, now there's a big but, and Prabhupada continues on his purport, those who are foolish and materialistic cannot understand Krishna. Even when they hear about Krishna, even when they see Krishna appear 5,000 years ago, they still cannot understand Krishna. Prabhupada said once only a handful of people, even when Krishna appeared and probably hundreds of thousands of people, millions and millions of people saw him, only a few really understood who he was. Of course, his devotees did, you know, but those outside, not so much. Now, Srila Prabhupada states that why, one thing, they're astonished by the material laws and material nature. He said they're very enamored by the infinite and infinitesimal. In other words, they want to study the infinitesimal. Go in their microscopes, look at atoms, look at subatomic particles and neutrons and protons. And I was just seeing something about someone was saying one of the greatest advancements in history was in science was the discovery of the double helix structure of DNA. Some of you are probably familiar with that. Okay, so what? You know, all right, there's DNA, it's a tiny little thing within the atom, within the molecule, and this is how it's shaped, okay? That's how Krishna made it. Anyway, they think that's the greatest discovery in the world. So they're enamored by the infinitesimal, and obviously they're enamored by the infinite. They look at the universe, and they see how great it is, and they even have an inkling that it may be infinite. You know, sometimes they even talk this way. They say, well, how could you just come to the end like it's over? You know, you come to the end as far as we can see it, it must continue on. And there's even some theories, aren't there, that light bends and becomes curved, light waves, and as it goes out in the universe, which of course it does, because what's out there? The shell of the universe, right? The outer shell is there. So, you know, it's kind of like, but they don't think, oh, what has made this? How is this happening? What's the explanation? They think, oh, gee, material energy is so wonderful. And we understand a little bit, and we're going to understand more and more, and finally we'll understand everything. Because we'll know how the material energy works. Thus, they remain in illusion. And they certainly cannot understand Krishna when he descends in the human-like form. So most living entities, they remain bewildered by the influence of the material energy and thus forget Krishna. Bhagavatam 8.5.30 says, no one can overcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead's illusory energy, Maya, which is so strong that it bewilders everyone, making one lose the sense to understand the aim of life. And Prabhupada says in his purport, external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives all conditioned souls what appears to be an opportunity to be happy within this material world. Right? Looks like a good plan. We can be happy here. But that is Maya. In other words, it is a dream never to be fulfilled, Srila Prabhupada says. A dream never to be fulfilled. In other words, it's dangling in front of us. Somehow in this material world, there'll be some enjoyment. We can really do it now. Maybe next lifetime. This one didn't work so well. Maybe I'll go to the heavenly planets. But still, it's a dream never to be fulfilled. So, basically, the material scientists and philosophers refuse to consider spiritual explanations to phenomena. And thus, they remain enamored by this material energy. There's a purport in, I like this, Srila Prabhupada, it's Bhagavatam 4.22.56. It says, although this material world is condemned when it's compared to the spiritual world, in other words, it's nothing in comparison to the spiritual world, there is a purpose behind it. Modern scientists and philosophers cannot understand that purpose, nor do they believe in the existence of a creator. They try to establish everything by their so-called scientific research, but they do not center anything around the Supreme Creator. Okay. Now, it's interesting. You wonder how, despite whatever evidence or logic or, you know, there might be, why is this? There's a phenomenon in psychology. It's called confirmation bias. It's kind of interesting. Confirmation bias is defined as a tendency to search for and interpret information in a way that confirms our own preconceptions, right? Example, I don't like somebody. Of course, Vaishnava shouldn't be thinking that way. But this is my friend, my enemy. That's material thinking, politics. But let's say we're human. We do sometimes. I don't really like somebody. We'll look for evidence that confirms their bad qualities, and even if they do something good or nice, we'll ignore anything contradictory or any of the good qualities. We look for those things that confirm our previous misconceptions. Now, basically, in spiritual life, materialists and scientists have preconceptions based upon sensory evidence, right? What I see with my senses, what I experience, what my mind, how it interprets all of this, makes me ignore or discount any spiritual knowledge, spiritual experience, or spiritual evidence, or logic, or reason. What to speak of, information given in a descending process of the Shastras, of the Vedic literature. But of course, the devotees know that the real explanation of all phenomena that we see depends entirely on understanding Krishna's diverse energies. It's understanding Krishna, but also understanding how all of his different energies work. And that's a science that we learn in devotional service. So the scientists want to explain everything in terms of the material energy, and sometimes subtle energies, maybe like we want yogic power, mystic powers or something, mostly gross energies. They try to understand matter and energy, and they try to alleviate suffering in the material world. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they have some motive to try to advance civilization, relieve some suffering, maybe in medicine or something. You know, they may have some mode of goodness, let's say at best. That's maybe our top motivation. But the result often is an increase in suffering. Prahlad Maharaj said, Maya Sukhaya Bharam Uvahato Vimudan. Fools and rascals are making elaborate plans for material happiness to maintain family, societies, and country. But this Maya Sukhaya means one makes an endeavor for enjoyment, and it actually leads to an increase in suffering. We can see some examples of that. I was reading something about Albert Einstein, and towards the end of his life, he was very, very involved in social justice. He was very involved in the civil rights movement, very supportive, and in the peace movement. Now, Einstein's probably I don't know much about science. I don't have any scientists here. But I believe that some of his theories led to, you know, production of weapons. In fact, I know that he was consulting with the Defense Department in World War II about torpedo trajectories and things like that and working out the formulas. So he did have some part in that. And I think he regretted it. He regretted it later in life. You know, and he tried to, you know, come to a little higher understanding and not be just, you know, contributing to the suffering of material life. Maybe too late, though. Anyway, materialists think they can solve the problem with material solutions rather than spiritual. That's kind of the bottom line. Now, it's interesting that this seems to be a very modern phenomenon. We think, you know, sometimes we condemn scientists and, you know, they weren't always like this. One of our greatest scientists of all time is Isaac Newton. Has anyone not heard of Isaac Newton? Sure you have. Gravity, all of that, many different physical theories, law of conservation and matter. I mean, many, many very, very important theories that are correct and are used today. Now, he said, gravity explains the motion of the planets, but it cannot explain who set the planets in motion. God governs all things and knows all that is or can be done. Now, this is a little bit more pious days, I believe, when even the scientists knew, I know a certain amount, very limited, but who's behind it all? So even Isaac Newton said, God must be behind it all, right? So, back to our purport. After Krishna describes the mudas, the 9-11 not surrender, then, of course, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna goes the other direction. If these two people do not surrender, who does surrender? Who are the pious surrender devotees? In 13 and 14, chapter 9, Usanaprita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, under the protection of divine nature. They're fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible, always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me. These great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. So devotees try to somehow or another always remember and worship Krishna. Now, how does, even if one is confronted, all these different, what should I say, Krishna's energies, Krishna's varieties, his different expansions, his purushas, so many different things. How does one remember Krishna? This is a purport of Srila Prabhupada of 10.12.7. Now, this describes the great fortune of the coward boys. Yeah, in these verses, there's six verses together in verse 7. So, you know, that's the sort of why this is here. He's describing the great fortune of the coward boys. And then Prabhupada says, as recommended by Srila Goswami, tasmat kinap yupavena manasa krishne niveshayat. That's from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion 1.2.4. Therefore, one may somehow or another think of Krishna by any favorable method. So that's the goal, and that's what the Bhagavatam is leading here to, trying to get people to somehow or another remember Krishna in some form, in some way, to make advancement. Then Prabhupada says, somehow or another, whether one thinks of Krishna as an ordinary human child, as the source of the Brahman effulgence, as the origin of Paramatma, or as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one should concentrate full attention upon the lotus feet of Krishna. This is also the instruction of Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma Pratyaja, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Srimad Bhagavatam is the easiest way of directly approaching Krishna. This is right from the beginning, 112. Ishvarasara Hridyava Yavarujatetra Kritabhi Shushushabhi Stachana. Diverting even a little of one's attention toward Krishna and activity in Krishna consciousness immediately enables one to achieve the highest perfection of life. That is the purpose of the Krishna conscious movement. Lokasya Janatovid Vamas Chakra Satvatasamita, Bhagavatam 176. The secret of success is unknown to people in general. And therefore, Srila Vyasadeva, being compassionate toward the poor souls in this material world, especially in this age of Kali, that's us, have given us the Srimad Bhagavatam. The actual translation of that from Prabhupada from 176 is Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. It is more dear to the Vaishnavas because it describes pure and supreme knowledge of the Paramahamsas. Okay? So for somewhat, what last part of the purport, for Vaishnavas who are somewhat advanced or who are fully aware of the glories and potency of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam is a beloved Vedic literature. So all devotees appreciate, love, are inspired by the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada is here, you know, before we said, earlier, the purport said only advanced devotees can appreciate Krishna's pastimes. Here it's saying if you're somewhat advanced, so you get a little leeway here. If you're somewhat advanced, you can still appreciate the Bhagavatam. And in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura's purport on this same 10.12.7, on the same verse, he says there are three types of people that are contrasted to the fortune of the coward boys. There's three that aren't at the same level. So first there's Maya Ashritanam, who those who are in the clutches of material energy and they see Krishna as just an ordinary human being. Then there is Satam, the transcendentalists or the jnanis, and their happiness is sought in the Brahman effulgence. And they don't understand that that is actually within the body of Krishna, Brahmanohi Prasishtanam. Krishna is the basis of the impersonal Brahman. And even while he's playing in Vrindavan, he still contains the Brahman within him. Okay? And then there's Dasham Gatanam, devotees in servitorship, the non-Rajavasis. They're advanced devotees. They can even have very, very high prema. But they're not able to play with Krishna and appreciate the pastimes in the same way as the residents of Vrindavan. Now, in contrast, the residents of Vrindavan represent the highest perfection of life. They concentrate their attention fully on Krishna, 100% devotion. And Srila Prabhupada says that we may reach perfection by just a little attention toward Krishna. Bhagavad Gita says, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise this to you because you're my very dear friend. Now this purport is interesting. Because Srila Prabhupada says, what does it mean to become his devotee, worship him, when he keeps, Krishna's always saying, me, mom, myself. What does it mean? Prabhupada's making it very clear in this purport I'm just going to read that that means Krishna. Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality of Godhead. Prabhupada said, these words stress that one should concentrate his mind upon Krishna, the very form of two hands carrying a flute, the bluish boy with a beautiful face and peacock feathers in his hair, There are descriptions of Krishna in the Brahma-samhita and other literatures. One should fix his mind on the original form of Godhead, Krishna. One should not even divert his attention to other forms of the Lord. And then Prabhupada mentioned some other forms of the Lord, but I don't think it's my place to say anything that might look negative towards any other form of the Lord. But Prabhupada does. He just says, we're interested in Krishna. It's as simple as that. This is the Hare Krishna movement. We are worshiping Radha Krishna. That's what we're about, right? That's what we're about. We're about worshiping Krishna. Now, that doesn't mean if someone's a devotee of Ramachandra or something, that's fine. That's wonderful. They can go back to Godhead. They can go to the planet of those avatars. They can, and the experience is described in the, this is a senior moment now, in the, what was Sanatana Goswami? Brihad Bhagavatamrita. That the, all of these devotees have pure prema. So that's not to discount anyone else, but our line from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, and all of our acharyas, really centered around Krishna in its original Swayam Bhagavan, original form of Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada gives examples of how Krishna performed these wonderful pastimes. He says, but one should know that the infinite and infinitesimal size of the Lord are not his highest glories. The most wonderful manifestation of the Lord's power is exhibited when the infinite Lord becomes visible to our eyes. Yet his activities are different from those of finite beings. And he gives examples here of Krishna's infinite energy. Krishna lives a giant mountain, Govardhan Hill, when he's 7 years old. Krishna marries 16,100 wives in the prime of his youth in Dwarka. Of course, this is not believed by the materialists. They are considering this mythological. But they, you know, it's interesting. They say God is great, but then they don't believe it when he shows his greatness. Now, God's great. Okay, he shows great. Oh, no, we can't believe it. He couldn't do that. They're limiting God. But interestingly, these pastimes don't just show Krishna's greatness. Beyond that, they also show his sweetness to his devotees, his loving relationship to his devotees. So Krishna's human-like pastimes show both Aishvarya, his greatness, and Madhurya, his sweetness. Now, when Madhurya here is used not just for conjugal ras, it means his sweet pastimes, which includes Sakya Vatsala, all the other rasas that are there in Vrindavan, according to Jiva Goswami. So Aishvarya is most prominent in Mathura and Dwarka and many other avatars, where Madhurya is most prominent in Vrindavan. Now, there's some mixture, of course, because obviously the queens in Dwarka also had a conjugal rasa, and they experienced Krishna's sweetness and beauty and everything else. But they still kind of knew he was God, right? That was always there. He was God. Where the sweetness predominates in Vrindavan. So let's take a look at these examples Srila Prabhupada gave us. Lifting Govardhan Hill. He certainly shows his Aishvarya, his power, doing something that would be impossible for everyone. But at the same time, he gives an opportunity for all of the Vrijavasis to see him continually for 7 days. Now, as you read, you know, Krishna book, or you read 10th canto, many times devotees will, you see that they're just intensely, almost in distress, not almost, they are in distress when they can't see Krishna. What they showed is like, you know, practically crying when Krishna goes off to the cow, you know, to herd cows because she's not going to see him for 6 or 8 hours, you know. And then when he, and then the gopis, of course, are always in distress if they don't see Krishna every moment. But here, this is one of his reasons it's described. He stood there for 7 days and nights where everyone of every rasa in Vrindavan could just look at him and just view his beauty and his wonder. And he did this, his display of power, holding up one little finger. What? How much? I wonder how much Govardhan Hill weighed. Millions of tons?
28 miles.
You know?
28 miles.
It's 28 miles. I don't know how much it weighs, but that's pretty big. That's pretty. We couldn't even calculate the weight of a 28-mile circumference mountain. Okay, but he gave the, you know, he displays his power, but it does not diminish the pure love. What does Mother Yashoda afterwards? She goes and rubs his arm because he wants, my little boy must be very tired. You know, yeah, she saw him do something which is just incredible. Whose child could do that? But still, her love, her Vatsalya Ras, just, oh, my boy, let me make sure you're okay. And she thinks, oh, Nanda must have helped him, holding his stick up, you know. And so it doesn't diminish their love. The cowards, but, you know, the coward men had some doubts. And they came to Nanda. And they said, now we've seen him killing all of these demons. We've seen him do wonderful things, killing Agasura and Kaishi and this one and that one, Putana. And we also just saw him lift this mountain. So we're beginning to wonder, who is he? So Nanda then explains what Garga Muni said in his name-giving ceremony. And he said, Garga Muni said, Krishna will be just like Narayan. Now it's interesting because Nanda's interpretation of that was, my son will be empowered by Narayan. See, there's a difference. He's not saying that Krishna is Narayan. He's empowered by Narayan. Look, he has one, you know, and because he was so wonderful and could do all these wonderful things, what did that make him do? Love him even more. So even when there was a display of Aishwarya by the power of Yoga Maya, it just increased their prema, increased their love. Okay? So then the coward men were satisfied by that. And they even went to Krishna later to describe in Vishnu Purana, but I'm running out of time. So, and he said, you didn't even think of me that way. I'm just your friend. Krishna tells the coward men, they say, okay, good. We like that. Because they were mostly in, you know, Sakya Rasa or Vatsalya Rasa, depending on their age. So now, Krishna marries 16,108 wives. It's very astonishing, but certainly if Krishna is the totality of everything, he's certainly capable of that. You know, I mean, if he can expand into the hearts of every living entity in the universe, I wonder how many that is. I wonder how many living entities, the trillions and trillions we're talking about just in this little universe, right? He can expand a supersoul into every single heart. And he doesn't become diminished. He's not splitting himself up. So what's to expand to 16,108 times? So it says, well, this is very astonishing. It's very cute, but the queens cannot enjoy conjugal rasa if they were thinking this way. They're thinking, oh my gosh, Jesus, look how he's dividing himself into 16,100. So it says, all the Lord's activities in the many palaces were performed by the Lord's single spiritual form, Ekena Vapusa, which manifested in many places at once. Now, there's a technical difference here, which I don't fully understand. The acharyas say that it's not that he expands himself or splits himself into many parts. He's one, Ekena. He's Krishna. But he manifests differently to all these different people. So every queen, what happened? Every queen thought, he is only with me. He's my husband in my palace. This is described in chapter 69 of the 10th canto when Narada Muni visits the palaces. He's astonished to see Krishna performing a different activity in each palace. You know, it's not like a mirror reflection. He's doing the same thing. Everyone is individual because he has an individual relationship with each one of his devotees. And each queen thought he only lived with her and was with her. And nobody really saw this in Dwarka. Narada Muni was given this special vision because he wanted to see. And, you know, Narada Muni's in kind of a very special case of devotees. Anyway, Yoga Maya covers the devotees. So they don't experience too much of Krishna's powers. Too much Aishwarya, too much of Krishna's powers would diminish their loving relationship. You know, I mean, if you had a let's say you're president of the United States and you go home at night and you're really tired, you had a hard day at the office, as they say, you know, you had wars going on and everything else, you know. But you want to go home and relax with your family. You know, they say, oh, dear Mr. President, you know, how can I, you know. They would say, no, you're my wife, my children, you know, just I want to relax with you, right? So in other words, he's not going to enjoy that as much. So Krishna, it's like he wants to go to Vrindavan and enjoy these wonderful familial relationships, really, you know, with all of his devotees. Now, Krishna also displayed a very similar Leela in the Rasa dance in verse 3 of chapter 32. Maybe. 33. The festive rasa dance commenced with the gopis arrayed in a circle. Krishna expanded himself and entered between each pair of gopis, placing his arms around their necks. Because he was the master of yoga maya, each girl thought he was standing next to her alone. So very similar. Each gopi thought, Krishna's only with me. So while Mahamaya deludes the living entity and increases forgetfulness of Krishna, yoga maya creates an illusion to diminish his greatness and increase prema for Krishna. That's what Yoga Maya's business is, to increase prema, to make wonderful pastimes and leela, and, you know, sometimes there's all these complications and the love affairs in Krishna and the gopis. This is all just to increase the pleasure of both the devotees and Krishna. He also shows his universal form to Mother Yashoda. And the, let me read a real quick commentary on that. This is from Jiva Goswami's commentary on 10.845. The following should be considered. Her greatness was not because of seeing the universe. Now, this Mother Yashoda is not considered great because Krishna showed her the universe. He says, this does not mean that she saw Krishna as the Lord, for otherwise she would have praised him as Devaki did. The meaning of this episode is not that seeing Krishna as the Lord is superior and seeing him as her son is inferior. So since that meaning cannot be found in the verses. Pericet praises her for rejecting knowledge of the Lord, instead worrying about his protection and feeding Krishna milk. The most knowledgeable of poets, such as Vyasadeva, stated that Yashoda's realization of Krishna as her son was the highest. So, purpose of the Bhagavatam is to attract people to the activities of Krishna. Vyasadeva gave this to the fallen people of Kali Yuga. It is meant for Kali Yuga. He wrote this down specifically, this Amala Purana. And it's, Prabhupada said, most beloved literature to the devotees. So all devotees are attracted to the wonderful pastimes of Krishna in the 10th canto. And of course, as we all know, Prabhupada gave his Krishna book in 1970. So I wasn't even a devotee yet, so I assumed devotees were fairly neophyte at that time. But he gave us all of Krishna's pastimes, and we love the pastimes. And Nectar Devotion was the first book I ever read. Didn't understand a lot of it, but I loved it. For some reason, I just felt like, wow, these people really know something wonderful here, whatever it means. Chaitanya Charitamrita was given us in, 74, and you look, go into Madhya Lila chapters 23, and, you know, everything about highest levels of prema is described. So Prabhupada gave us all this and expected us to read all of his books. So why only, do we say only advanced devotees? And Prabhupada kind of explains this in the last paragraph. He says, if even muddhas hear from disciplic succession, they become devotees. And he says, for this reason only, either in the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, the pastimes of the Lord in the material world are delineated for the benefit of those men with a poor fund of knowledge. Now, in Vishnachakavarti Thakur, in his purpose, says, the explanations of creation, etc., are meant to turn materialists into sadhana bhaktis. So in other words, all that we've been talking about hearing Krishna in the different ways and his different energies in the material universe, is not meant to just give people a little bit of understanding about God, but he says it's meant to turn materialists into sadhana bhaktas. So if one is a serious practicing bhakta, one can hear Krishna's Leela and Srimad Bhagavatam. That's my understanding from what the Acharyas told us and what Prabhupada is indicating. Doesn't mean you have to be a pure devotee before you can read the 10th canto, but it means you have to have some understanding of Krishna. You've had to read the other 9 cantos. You have to understand Krishna's greatness, his glory, his Aishwarya as well. Then when one enters into the pastimes, one won't take it cheaply, misunderstand it, or in a sahaja way, or thinking it's done very cheaply. One will understand it for what it is. So this hearing, there's another purpose. It attracts us, of course, but in itself purifies the heart. Of course, this is a very famous verse, the very, very end, the last verse of the 5 chapters of the Rasa Dance, 10:33-39. Shukadeva says, anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan will attain the Lord's pure devotional service. Now you might think, well, should anyone just hear these? They might take them the wrong way, as materialistic love between boys and girls. Then he says, thus he will quickly become sober and conquer lust, the disease of the heart. So even if one has some lust, by hearing Krishna's pastimes, obviously submissively, in the right way, through disciplic succession, through the spiritual master, then one's materialistic tendencies and lust will actually begin to diminish. And that's the great wonder of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that it's there for all people, whatever your level of advancement, to give attraction to Krishna's devotees to him. Okay, I'm finished. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Questions, comments? Start with Gautamika.
In the beginning, Prabhu, you mentioned that the Virat Rupa is not eternal like the Leela avatars. So are all the Dash avatars Leela avatars?
They're eternal.
Okay.
They may not always manifest everywhere, but they are eternal. They have their own planets,
They have their own planets.
Yeah,
one of them.
Well, I don't know about everyone, but according to Brihad Bhagavatamrita, mentioned planets Ramachandra, planets of Nrsingadev, the Prahladas, the major ones,
Varaha.
I mean, Krishna has unlimited avatars, so it's hard to say. Maybe they all have their own planet.
Does Buddha have his own planet?
Who?
Buddha.
I haven't ever heard of that. Does anyone know?
Right.
I haven't heard of it.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't heard. I don't see that. I don't haven't seen it mentioned, but
even. I'm still questioning.
Okay. Anyone? Someone else? Nobody else? Trevor Crum. Go.
Like you had quoted that verse, was it Duskritina mood or something like that? Anyhow, there are some people, especially so-called educated people, they find it very difficult to comprehend the mystical powers of God. You know, they can't, as soon as they hear about it, they immediately reject it or something and say that this is a magician or this is like Santa Claus or mythical stuff.
Mythical, yeah.
You know, yeah. Mm-hmm. So how would you be able to convince these type of people? I mean, how can you in a logical way be able to change
if somebody hears about the glories and rejects them, I think it's probably difficult to just convince them through logic, to be honest. I mean, I've had enough debates with people to, it doesn't usually happen easily. It's better, I think, that somehow they're engaged in devotional service. Their heart needs to be softened a little bit, purified, to Upashadam, hearing the holy name, maybe chanting, whatever, you know. In other words, and by hearing. And if they continue to read and hear, it happens over time. I remember there was one back in Potomac in the 70s, we had one young guest who came, and he was a confirmed Buddhist. And he argued with us, and he argued with everybody, and every similar philosophical point he contested, and then he took home huge, huge containers full of prasadam, which is trying to irritate the devotees. He comes and he just argues, he doesn't listen to anything, and he takes it, you know, and he gets a week's worth of prasadam every time he comes to the temple. He became a devotee, eventually. You know, it'll happen. He ate enough prasadam to become purified.
Okay. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila chapter 20, .263-264, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching this to Sanatana Goswami Pada. He himself says, so this is the Prabhupada's translation, the avatar or incarnation of Godhead descend from the kingdom of God for material manifestation. And the particular form of the personality of Godhead who so descend is called an incarnation or avatar. Such incarnation are situated in the spiritual world, the kingdom of God. When they descend to the material creation, they assume the name avatar.
Yeah. So they're there.
So it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself said.
Yeah, in the spiritual world. Yeah.
Everybody has form. Except that Prabhupada on the last, after the last purport on 5th canto, 26th chapter, and Prabhupada gave a little appendix, brief. In that I remember he said that Mohini Murti and Rishabdev are not vividly explained in the spiritual domain. So I don't know what that means.
One thing is Rishabdev, I believe, is a Shaktivesh avatar. So he's actually a living entity who's empowered by the Lord, I believe.
Correct.
So maybe he doesn't have his own planet. Mohini Murti was a very temporary type of form.
And but the way
I don't think devotees have a rasa with Mohini Murti, right?
But the way Prabhupada put it, are not vividly explained, means you just have to accept as it is.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
We can just accept that. Is that all? Parasurama is mentioned. I've sort of seen it both. I'm not sure. I've seen it that he is a full incarnation, full love, and that he's a Shaktivesh. Is that what you're saying? I have seen that, so I'm not sure. But at any rate, he obviously displays all the features of of Krishna. Okay, thank you all so much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.